All right, episode 83. We are back, and we're back with Jay Gonzo. What's up, dude?
Not much, man. Just, had a great lunch and doing this now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tacos.
Yep, absolutely.
Delicious. What did you get? Which two tacos?
Brisket and fried chicken.
Okay, brisket. Yeah. I always go fish and fried chicken.
Yeah, just like my Nana used to make.
Nice, nice.
I always love checking out Mexican food in other cities. It's interesting.
Well, yes, I'll play neutral and say yes. I agree with you in that it's interesting. In some places, it's not what we would consider Mexican food, and that's what makes it fun and exciting.
Yeah, right? You know, it's as Mexican as pizza in America, right?
Yeah. So. All right. What are we going to talk about today? What's on tap?
I thought we were just going to talk about what we love about advertising.
What we love about advertising. All right, that's a nice broad subject for us. I'll take notes on this. Let's start with you, since you're the guest. What do you love about advertising?
I love that when it's good, when it's really good, when it's at its best, it can contribute to the culture.
Yeah.
You know, I think like, things like Just
Be Like
Do It.
Mike.
Yeah.
It's funny. We immediately both go to Nike.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Think Different or any of those. I think, at its best, it can contribute to culture. And
what about like, Where's the Beef and those types of things, Got Milk.
Yeah, you know that were kind of cultural phenomena.
Well, it definitely permeated into like, now we've got funny t-shirts and bad puns and things like that. Is that good advertising or is that,
Well, I talk about this campaign that Lee Jeans did in the early 90s.
Okay.
It was just really, they were just getting their, butts handed to them by Levi, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what they did is these really gritty, kind of quirky black and white commercials with Buddy Lee. Remember those? They had the little Buddy Lee bobblehead in them.
I remember that.
Cool music that had that kind of like...
I don't remember the tagline.
Was it like Helmut Newton kind of esque? Like he's the guy who shot Wicked Game music video, right? Isn't that Helmut Newton? It was that kind of like...
I feel like Chris Isaac.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, so, there was a lot of fashion photographers were making music videos then, so you get, and honestly out of that school, you kind of get David Fincher, who then starts making movies, but... Okay. So they kind of, it was like that feel to this, these Buddy Lee commercials.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, everyone loved the commercials, and Levi sales went up because they were so cool that people thought they were obviously Levi commercials. Yeah.
Do you remember the tagline of that campaign? Cause I do not remember that.
I don't remember the tagline, but, I just remember, they definitely felt like Levi commercials because Levi's had built their brand around being irreverent and cool and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And Buddy Lee or Lee Jeans had been a little more utilitarian, right? Mm-hmm. Like if Red Wing Shoes suddenly started making edgy ads, they're basically just doing advertising for Nike now because Nike is cornered the market on that emotional space.
Totally.
Whereas Red Wing Boots are like about being functional. I mean, they promise two very different things. And so, and I think that, and there you go. And that's one of the things I love about advertising is that you can... Is that you can own an emotional quadrant of feelings in your sector, your business sector. You know, like I always say, IBM and Macintosh ostensibly both do the same thing.
Correct.
They sell computers.
Yes.
However.
You're going to sound like Simon Sinek right now, right?
No. Yeah. Macintosh or Apple says, isn't this cool?
Yeah.
Look how cool this is.
Yeah.
IBM says, look how smart you are.
Yeah.
Because one is playing against or is indulging people, like people who want to build their own computers and put their own machines together. Yeah. And it's all, look how smart you are. Look how great you can be. And the other one is just about like almost fashion message.
I was about to say it's almost fashion.
Yep. Or it's just like, look how cool it is to have this thing and look how fun this is.
Totally.
One is selling enjoyment and one is selling intellect and they're very different messages. And so you can own parts of that. So if Apple ever did something that was all about like, you can customize your Apple from the ground up. You can get in there and put your processing, visual processor.
Build your own Mac.
Oh, if you could build your own Mac, they would just, IBM sales would go up, right?
Yeah.
I feel like they would. So, but that's what I love about advertising. I love that, and what I love about being in advertising is you're into psychology, you're into brain science.
Absolutely.
Because ultimately our job is just to sway decision making, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I say quite frequently is the power of persuasion, right? Yeah. And it's and if we're going to keep this Apple train rolling, it's, hey, here's this magical little box that you can put in your pocket, and you can put 1,000 songs on there, and we call it the iPod. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Right? And it was like, huh, I didn't know I needed that until you told me I needed that, right? And it was like, that's interesting. And then Apple comes out and goes, whoa, wait a minute. You can't have 1,000 songs. You need 10,000 songs. And we're like,
they just tapped in the arms race mentality.
I need 10,000 songs, right?
Yeah.
And then it was, wait a minute. No, dude, you know what you need? You need every song ever written in the history of ever.
Yeah, ever recorded. Yeah, and it was like, to it.
You're damn right, I do. Apple, right. Mm-hmm. So I mean that interesting power of persuasion. Right?
Well, what it is you know, you're selling the solution, or you're not even selling the solution. You're selling the result of the solution, yeah. Right? Like I, you know, when
Would
I
you remember that initial campaign too. I mean,
the silhouettes,
right?
Was, yeah, great. You know,
brilliant, right? Yeah. Because it was people dancing.
It was a catchy song,
yeah,
to begin with. You know, catchy current song,
yeah.
And it was personified without. It has that kind of that masking effect, right? Because yeah. It wasn't too specific that anyone could put themselves in there because they were silhouettes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm sure you've talked about iconography before, like where the more simple you get, the more broad the appeal is, right?
Totally.
The more you know, precise you get,
universal
the
symbols.
Universality by being mm-hmm. simple, yeah. So
absolutely,
you know, the universality, the access to it, the fun of it all,
yeah.
Absolutely, you know. So you know, but it is that adage of like people don't want to buy drills; they want round holes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So like, you got to figure out like what is the round hole that they want, and
it's an interesting way of putting it. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's not mine. I stole that from some. I mean, I've heard it other places, but yeah, like. So like when I did an ad campaign for a children's hospital,
okay,
and you know they had this great history. So like, is their brand promise the yeah. you know history of innovation, or they also have state of the art? You know, is it yeah. state of the art healthcare?
Yeah,
is it you know the caring, the hands on, mm-hmm. the you know high touch kind of
yeah.
you know
yeah.
you know? But at the end of the day, and what I had to talk, you know, so a lot of children's hospitals emotionally manipulative. They show a lot of bald, sad children.
Sure.
You know, play some Sarah McLachlan and you're
sure.
like, oh man. And that's but that's like eventually you just get desensitized to that kind of message. And you know,
yeah.
and it's also a race to the bottom because no one wants to think about their kid with cancer.
No.
Even the cancer parents don't want to think about their kid
Correct.
With cancer. They want to know they're in good hands. But at the end of the day, what a children's hospital is selling is healthy children.
Sure.
They want you back to normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so like you know, we did a great campaign with them where we actually showed a bunch of kids just doing ordinary things. A little
yeah.
commercial, like a kid learning to tie a shoe, one learning to ride a bike, one playing soccer,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Sick kids getting back to normal.
The kid playing soccer had a grapefruit-sized tumor in her brain for, I don't know, like a few months that they took out. The kid riding his bike lived 3 months without a heart in his chest.
What?
Yep.
What does that even mean?
They hooked him up to machines.
Oh, wow.
They took out his bad heart, okay. and while they waited for a donor... He had no heart in his chest for three
that
months, for 90 some odd days. I can't
wow.
remember the exact. You know, so, you know, you show the ordinariness of these moments
yeah.
of like learning to ride a bike, but then you
yeah.
backfill it with this story. But again, at the end of the day, you want to see the healthy child and go, that's where I want my
yeah.
kid to be. So,
yeah.
you know, if you're selling the whole, you like sell people, you know, it benefiting from mm-hmm. having used the drill, don't show the drill. I mean, you know, like it again, people don't want drills, they want round holes.
Yeah, there's an interesting aspiration of advertising that maybe isn't necessarily as reflected in design if I was to split the two. And I use the example all the time of weight loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the category of weight loss,
yep,
right?
Yep.
We've done a fair amount of pet food packaging, right? And one of the dog food packages is like, hey, mm-hmm. weight management, right?
Yeah, yeah,
it's a little Fido, a little husky, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the interesting power of persuasion and where design meets advertising sometimes is, you know, when you think about weight loss, it's always, hey, I'm holding up a giant pair of pants I used to wear, or
yeah, yeah.
hey, I'm in a bikini, or I'm looking good on the
yeah.
beach, or, you know, it's aspirational of this is what I can look like, right? I don't look like that, but I want to look like that, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. And
do you show Fido with a big collar?
Well, no. What I was going to say was, you know, when you're purchasing for yourself, it's aspirational,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's, oh, I like that Apple mm-hmm. ad. I want to rock the iPod too. You know,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
dating
yeah.
myself,
yeah.
right? The silhouettes, as we talked
yeah,
about.
Yeah, exactly. I want that kind of fun.
But then, you know, for the pet food packaging, when you're purchasing for others, mm-hmm. right, it's, oh yeah, you always show chunky dogs. You show husky dogs on
yeah,
it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Not husky, the
breed, yeah, yeah,
but
exactly.
like big old thick dogs, right? And yeah. it's like, ooh, yeah. You know, Lassie does look like that back at the house.
Yep,
maybe
yep.
I should buy this instead, right?
Yeah, they're a little more objective about what they're doing as opposed to the emotional
yeah.
brand, you know, the emotional connection you need with someone who's...
But the psychology
know.
Of
but that's almost a B2B message, though, at that point, right? Because you're selling... Yes, you're not selling to a consumer, but not
yeah.
the person who's going to consume it. You know, that is almost a B2B where you have to show more efficacy than you have to show...
Let me ask you this, going on a quick little tangent, though. You know, 20 years ago... Mm-hmm. Hardcore B2B, B2C, there were very clear lines. It was very clear, you know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you still feel like B2B and B2C is still a thing? Because I keep hearing more about H2H. Have you heard about H2H?
No.
It's all human to human.
Oh, okay.
Right, because at the end of the day, we're all consumers, we're all purchasers. Whether you're the bean counter or in procurement of a large, mm-hmm. gigantic corporation, it's like you are not the corporation, you are still a person who is purchasing, right? So I don't know. Any spur of the moment thoughts on, you know,
that sort sounds
of interesting. I mean, the H my, to H is yeah, like, yeah, I mean, my, come my, on, yeah, exactly. Really?
My from the hip.
Is it more advertising BS or?
You know? Yeah, my from the hip, you know, response is that's probably true, right? Even when you're going B2B, you're trying to elicit some kind of emotional response.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, I've talked about this before, people make emotional decisions.
Yeah.
All people, all the time. That's how it works.
Malcolm Gladwell blank.
But I feel like the, Daniel Pink's Whole New Mind is a really good resource for that too. Like got a lot of great fMRI science that talks about that. But I feel like, you know, I think.
But advertising B2B versus B2C, is there really that different of a strategy anymore?
I think,
is there, you know,
I mean, I guess it depends on what you're doing and on a case by case. I mean, I think things are just distinctively, you know, B2B. You know, I did a bunch of work for this tech company that, you know, like never had a, it was more profit driven because you were selling, you know, they were facilitator. God, I can't even explain how they did this. So they were teletechnology or telecommunications technology, bundlers essentially that worked, used like kind of the strength of how many people were selling beneath them to you kind of collectively bargain to get better deals. So you as an agent,
it's like a co-op
kind of, you as an agent could never go to AT&T and get the deal I can because I've got 40 agents that work with me. And I have negotiation, you know, leverage. So,
a lot of internet providers are like
that
too.
Their messaging was like talking to agents are basically, it's all about profit margins and spiffs and all these other like kind of perks and stuff like that. And then talking to, you know, there is no consumer there that they, but you're also creating materials for them to then take to the consumers, but their consumers are also businesses.
Yeah.
They're selling to schools and hospitals and things like that. And they're trying to like, oh, hey, I can hook you up with, you know.
Yeah. Better rates, but you still have the power of AT&T.
So not only was it, you know, B2B, but it was like B2B2B, you know? And I think that just not having like any kind of public face, cause there is no, at that point you don't have quite the competition. You don't have quite the, you've got a real qualified audience too. You've got people who are so immersed. I mean, these are the tech managers who run the facilities, who run the tech for the building that Intel's in or whatever. So they're a qualified audience. And again, it's an emotional decision, but I think that like when you're talking that qualified in an audience, there's a lot more shorthand that can happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that their pain points are extremely different. And a lot of times with B2C, you have to, be a little broader and you might actually have to do a lot more work being educational just to explain to them some of the basics of what, you know. So I feel like qualifying an audience, I think a qualified audience is B2B.
Yeah.
And I think an unqualified audience is B2C. Because it's a rarity that you find an audience that is completely savvy to some aspect, you know, some aspect of your advertising, marketing, branding, whatever is going to be educational. If you're, you know, doing anything beyond, you know, something that everyone understands, like I'm selling burgers, everyone understands burgers, right? That's fine, you know, but if you do anything even remote, like, you know,
or ubiquitous brands, like you don't have to explain what Coca-Cola is.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if Coca-Cola creates a new soft drink, you don't need to explain what that is.
Yeah, like how colas work.
You might just go flavor trigger. It's this, you know.
Everyone thinks they understand advertising and marketing, but how much of your job would you say is educational where you just have to bring clients up to speed with like brand promise, brand pillars? Like
I would say a tremendous aspect of more so now than there ever has been. And I don't know if that's a byproduct of...
Everyone's a business now.
Everyone's a business now, or just lack of formal training coming out of XYZ school, you know? Yeah. It's really interesting. And that's not to say that, you know, our clients or clients in general aren't as educated. So I'm not saying clients are, you know...
They'll become marketing managers on the client side, and they work their way up through the accounting department or something. So they don't have any marketing background at all. They were just earners as their accounting department or in charge of, like, concessions or something. Suddenly they're the president in charge of marketing, and so... Yeah. They have no marketing background. So I would say when I was a creative director, about 30% of my job was just educating clients to understand the metrics for success and the mechanics of success at that point.
Well, that also helps explain why we do the strategies that we do, why you write the messages that you do, why you do the visuals that you do, right? It's not just, hey, isn't this cool? Mm-hmm.
It's
here's why this is relevant to what your, but you know,
cool is always a byproduct,
but also too, you need to, sometimes you have to educate. Now this ad or this isn't actually for you. Mm-hmm. It's for your consumers who are XYZ, this and that. Right. And there's a lot of subjectivity because as you mentioned,
I would say there's no subjectivity. I think it feels like subjectivity and it feels like magic to the marketing directors. You have the clients that you have to deal with.
No, I'm saying the education. You have to educate them as to why you don't want to be subjective.
One of the things I love about, to come back to our subject, one of the things I do love about this business is getting someone who doesn't have a, like getting a client who doesn't have a firm grasp of marketing, advertising, design, where the differences are, what the overlaps are, getting them educated to the point where they, we're all pulling in the same direction now. I get them to clearly define a target so that our work can be measured in its efficacy to hitting said target.
Absolutely.
We have a clear metric of success. We're all pulling in the same direction. And sometimes, just sometimes, we actually hit that target. And it, you know, because our job is to move the needle for the client.
Absolutely. And, well, we've joked forever that, you know, if advertising was a guarantee, there'd be no such thing as the stock market.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's funny when people are like, huh? What? Like, well, how can you get, it's like, I can't guarantee anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we can lead everybody to exactly where they need to go. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to push the button. Yeah, we can give every reason, you know, are you really that much better than, I don't, you know, like, like nothing kills a bad product. Well, like, there's like great advertising.
There's,
I mean,
there's plenty of good products that have, you know, good advertising that just somehow don't connect, you know, the cultural, you know, zeitgeist, like changes between conception and execution.
Exactly.
Something new and some weird other cultural thing happens where no one wants to be involved in that. I mean, look at like the, you know, the McDLT comes out at a time when fast food packaging just gets completely under the scrutiny of the American public. They could have never foreseen that, that the weird, this weird fringy Greenpeace movement from 20 years earlier, mid-80s, or I guess early 90s, was suddenly going to like get so entrenched in a generation of people that when they... when they have this McDLT that has like twice the styrofoam of a regular burger, that that's when America as a whole decided to go like, yeah, maybe we don't put burgers in non-biodegradable packaging. And maybe it's not twice what it used to be. And that's what kills that product.
Yeah.
Like, not that it wasn't a good product, not that it wasn't tasty or any of the things.
Sure.
It all looked good on paper.
Yeah.
But the entire culture shifted in a way where it was no longer relevant.
All right. Let's flip the script really quick, not to totally interrupt, but
that's totally fine.
What don't you like about advertising?
Oh man.
You know?
You know, the things that, I guess part of it is I hate having, being forced to be, work against my own best, or work against the client's own best interest. When you presented your argument, clearly, you know, you've done, I've brought my 30 years of experience to bear on a project, and I'm like, look, this is how this is going to work. Like, trust me, I've been doing this a while.
Yeah.
And they just flippantly go, no, but I want to emulate this other company.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that company's already doing that. So all you're going to be doing is advertising. And the client. Yeah. You know, I used to work for a billionaire who owned a bunch of businesses, and he would start up businesses on a whim and just kind of like, oh, I'm going to get involved in, you know, he was making golf clubs.
Serial entrepreneur guy.
Yeah. And he, you know, he was making the most expensive commercially available golf clubs and way over engineered.
Okay.
They had a 50% failure rate during their manufacturing.
Oh my God.
Not a good deal. He's a billionaire. Yeah. And he was, and you know, so he's selling high touch.
Yeah.
You know, like, super elite, very expensive to very rich people who can also afford it. It's a billionaire selling stuff to other billionaires.
Yeah, sure.
And he decided, you know, we came up with a campaign, very luxury campaign, very clean, very black and white, you know, all the stuff, all the high touch kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He decides the best way to do this. We had a bunch of commercial campaigns that went along with our, with, you know, broadcast stuff. And he buys a ton of commercial time. He loves seeing a shit on TV.
Okay.
So we can swear?
Yes. Yeah,
okay. So he decides, good, because this is going to come to my punchline here. He decides the best way to sell these golf clubs are with dick jokes.
Oh, no.
And he fancies himself a creative person.
Yeah.
And so he's just making commercial after commercial that essentially is like a, you know, like a, you know, how big is your club kind of joke.
Yeah. Oh,
over
boy.
And
oh,
over boy. And over again. And sales are fine, you know, but like.
But it's not work you're proud of.
My name's nowhere on that stuff. You can't. I was kind of a freelance creative director at that place. Like, it was, that's a long story, but I was a freelancer and they kind of kept shedding people. And then I was suddenly like, am I the person with the most experience?
Are you the only person,
I mean, at some point I was the only person with more than 5 years experience in that department. And so by default, I mean, I had been creative director before then too, but, the real bitch of it is that this guy is a, you know, billionaire many times over.
Sure.
I could lose that guy, lose him $10 million and it's not even 8% of his bottom line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Doesn't matter.
It's not even 1%. So I mean, that is a ruinous amount of money to you or I or 98% of the people on the planet.
It's crazy to think about.
But he can lose $10 million and be like, well, that didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, and then, I mean, but he's still doing it. He's still, you know, and so it was hard.
Are those clubs still out there?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't know if I really want to name drop. But if people listen to the things I said, you can figure out who it is.
Yeah,
and that guy just does, you know, like he just does that. He just does, you know, and it's hard to, save clients from themselves sometimes. And I think that is when you're putting, you know, when you are, you know, what I think we all will call when you have to polish a turd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I got pretty good at turd polish. I've been doing it a lot of my life. And
well, anybody who's worked on our side of the fence for an extended period of time has encountered that for a variety of reasons. There's no silver or magic bullet as to why it happens. Sometimes it's just the agency culture. Sometimes it's the client. Sometimes it's, you know.
I think like the team system really screwed that up. But back in the early 2000s when everyone moved to teams, so your bigger departments like your Timmerman McLean's or DDB's and stuff, everyone was in a team now. And so you were on the Delta team or you were on the whatever team and you know, your clients. And it put the client at the center of the advertising universe in a way that had never had before. Like, and it really called into question our expertise on this side of the of the table.
Sure.
And I think since, you know, and now just with like, muggles out there downloading Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign and then just getting YouTube tutorials, it's only
You don't even need YouTube tutorials anymore. You just type it in AI.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like, give me an image of this doing this and this, and it's like, oh, I'm a creative. And so, it's like, oh my God, that's horrible.
None of the, I mean, I don't know if you've talked about those AI logos, but it's like, our jobs are fine.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about AI, but every time we talk about it, it's totally different the next time we come in to talk about it. That's what's totally insane about it. So yeah, I think if I was to answer my own question about some of the difficulties or what I like the least, I think I would echo your sentiments in that I think it's more the frustration of knowing what's going to happen before it happens, right? Mm-hmm. Is you mentioned you've got a tremendous amount of experience. We've got a tremendous amount of experience here. And it's, hey, you know what's going to happen. It's like, okay, hey, you've hired the doctor to diagnose you. Mm-hmm. We've given you the diagnosis. You don't like the diagnosis.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's fine. Let's talk about why. Let's talk about this. You know, and at the end of the day, hey, it's commercial art. If you're paying, I mean, it's a transaction. You know, you have the right to veto. You know, I mean, I get it, right? And it's, oh, okay, well, I need to tell you in as delicate a manner as possible. Like, you know, I've seen this happen before times. Yeah. So this is, you know, we're playing hopscotch here and we know what's going to happen. And just the inability sometimes, I said the power of persuasion earlier, but it's not convincing someone. It's just like, hey, we know where this is going to go. And then you just kind of have to live it out.
It's like being a parent, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, hey, bud, it's a bad idea. And they're like, nope, they're going to do it. And then they fall and they hurt themselves and they cry. Yeah. And you're like, all right, I think someone might've mentioned how bad an idea that was.
I know. But the problem there is, and it's a great analogy, but it's, oh, well, you don't fire your parents for giving you advice.
But kids will blame their parents. Yeah, exactly. I know exactly where you're going that way. Where they hire you because they like what you've done.
Yeah.
They ask you to do it for them. Then they tell you how to do it.
They fight against you.
And then when it doesn't work, you get all the blame.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I dislike that aspect of it. But I will say one of the things I do love about advertising is all the stuff that I think people on the outside would think was like, you know, crazy that we do. The overnights, the long hours, the impossible things.
Do you love that?
30 hours of work to do in 10 hours and people are like, oh my God, I can't do it. I'm like, give it to me. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And then when it gets done, when it happens and sometimes it's good, it's just like, there's no high like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know,
for any of those prospective clients out there listening, we do not do that.
Oh, I mean, you know,
we are an 8:30 to 5:30 shop and we don't work overnight.
So have you ever worked at like a big?
Yeah. When I was young, before I owned my own shop, I mean, it was definitely a, There were certain situations where, oh my God, it's a 16-hour day. You're only as good as your last great idea. You know, it's a pressure cooker. It's a this and that. I don't think that promotes great creative bonding, you know what I mean? Or teamwork amongst the agency.
The people I was at my first agency with, the one that was probably the most like a Mad Men type agency, right? Where it was just a beehive of people, you know, doing crazy shit. And I caught the tail end of the cocaine and hooker days. So I had I had some people who were, you know, grown up in that. I had mean creative directors who would just walk in and just go shit.
Crumble up your stuff,
you
know, kick something on the way out the door.
You slept there that night. He comes in at 9 a.m, like freshly shaved and clean, you know, and you're like, okay, man, here's my ideas. And he's just like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
You're like, I've done all of that, but I think it like kind of trauma bonded me. Like those are the only people I still talk to in advertising are the ones when it was still this vicious kind of like, you know, brutal business. And, I kind of, you know, there's a part of me that can't turn it off. I mean, I love the mad science of it all.
Yeah.
I love that, like, you know, someone can come to me with like, hey man, we need you to we did a campaign for the Phoenix Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
I'm like, awesome. That's great. There's some kind of ethical expression in what I'm doing there. But also if someone's like, man, I've got this cold sore cream medication that kind of is just, we took a generic version and slapped a fancy label on it. Can you do something with that? I'm like, I kind of kind of want to see if I can. You know, like, I love just, I want to know.
Sometimes most drab, wacky things you had never thought about are sometimes the most fun projects.
I just like seeing if I can do it more than anything. Like, I never ask. I mean, I would absolutely build the atomic bomb. I would never have stopped and been like, oh, is this ethical? Should we be doing this? I'd have been like, if I had the scientific knowledge and someone's like, hey man, can you make a nuclear weapon? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going to try.
Let's do it.
You know, how often are we asked to make some kind of nuclear weapon that's like, I don't know, this is going to mess a lot of things up, but
that's funny.
Let's try it. Yeah.
Every guest we have on, we didn't do it before, but every guest we have on, I always ask them what their favorite brand or design or whatever out there is. And I know I'm hitting you, you can name just a few that come to mind.
I'll tell you what,
but it's always fun to say, hey, what do you react against?
I'm really digging what Liquid Death is doing.
Liquid Death.
Yeah.
We did a whole podcast on Liquid Death.
Man, I think it's water, dude. It's water and it's bubbly water and maybe some flavors. And it's so fun and dumb and just so metal. It's just,
it's metal.
It's a 1988 drawing on my notebook, in water form.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of fantastic. I really liked what Factory Records did back in the day for the record packaging. I thought that they were really smart and clean, and they had a look when everything was so punk and fucked up. I mean, what is that? Fucked up and photocopied, right? There's a great book called that. But it was like, that was kind of the punk aesthetic, and they just were like, nah, we're going to be like super clean and modern.
Yeah.
I like their whole deal, Factory Records.
Fun.
I'm trying to think all the other usual, anything Vignelli touched. I think the New York Subway System rebrand is fantastic. Yeah. I think the NASA rebrand with the snake logo that happened in the 70s was
cool.
What was that company that just printed that recently? More than 5 years ago. You can buy the NASA style guide.
Oh,
And I like
that's incredible.
That rebrand. There's a really good Vox video on this where Nixon hired someone to rebrand all the public services.
And
they had all these really clean logos.
Yeah, but they never adopted them?
Lot of them did. Oh, it's where we get the IRS logo from. It's where we get, I'm trying to think what the other ones are. But those logo, rebrands are fine.
Super fun.
Great, yeah. So, I love anything kind of Swiss or Vignelli kind of somewhere in
Man,
between.
Man, you're speaking to my wife's heart. We're a big Mossimo fan at our house. So
yeah, did you watch the documentary?
We've seen it all. He's been to our house. Rachel co-taught a little charrette with him for a week. She did a week here at SCAD, and then I think, want to say, maybe 1 or 2 weeks up in Rochester when he was still there. So
nice. Wow.
We've got all, we're big fans.
Fantastic. So,
super fun. We've got his chairs. I mean, we try to get as much Vignelli stuff as we can. Yeah. It's super awesome. So Zoe and him had pancakes one morning. So it's that's totally insane. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I really like I believe it's Kodak is doing right now, where it has all these great photographs, and it has what you would have typed into an AI prompt to get that photograph, and it says don't give up on the real thing.
Yeah,
I'm kind of like that right now is probably the thing I'm most like. This sounds a bit like every so often someone writes a headline so great,
such
that
a universal
truth. You're like, I wish I want to. I kind of want to punch them just because I didn't get there first. But I think it's Kodak, and I think that's what I think it's like. Yeah, don't give up on the real thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fantastic.
So. Yeah. For me, I remember the one that really punched me when it debuted was, believe it or not, Volkswagen of all things. You know, on the road of life, there are drivers and there are passengers.
Yeah.
You know, drivers wanted, right? I was like, my God, that's so smart. That is just so smart. And they were coming out of Farfignugan and all sorts of terrible.
God,
it was the doldrums of Volkswagen. I was like, all right, that's like.
Trio, right? That was the band that did that song, the da-da-da for the Farfignugan. Yeah,
I don't remember.
I think, look that up, whoever's listening. It's a band called Trio. They do a song called.
I'll take your word for it, or we'll fact check it later.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for sitting in, man. Super fun,
thanks
as
for
always.
Having me, man. Yeah,
as always, brother. All right. Where can the people find you?
Just go to my Instagram. It's jgonzoart, or I do have a YouTube channel where I'm talking about just kind of my approach to advertising. I got one video up now, but hopefully there'll be two by the time this comes out.
Cool. Yeah, the video's great. I love the video. I might steal that and rebrand it.
Dude, hey, man. You're welcome to. That's why I put it up there. It's like everyone.
Talking about educating clients. What I love is the stretch about here's what you can control and here's what you kind of once you put things out in the world. It's kind of you don't control the narrative as much anymore.
Yeah, and some of those diagrams are taken right from my client presentation, like the art design PR, where there's overlap and kind of brand. But anyway, so that's on
your YouTube channel,
Jay Gonzo. You can find me. I think there's some numbers after it, but if you put in Jay Gonzo and advertising or whatever, it'll come up.
Exactly. All right, cool. All right, thanks everybody for listening. As always, send us comments, thoughts, questions, concerns, 5-star reviews.
Always
all that
5-star.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Always 5-star.
6 if you can make it happen.
Yeah, so. Please do. And you can find us online at mocktheagency.com or all the socials at Mock the Agency. And we'll chat with you next time. Thanks, everybody.